talking to the overnight sensation, Matt Eicheldinger. Did you know that he opened his Instagram account, he started posting stories, within 6 weeks he had 300,000 followers and a book deal? Well, that's what it looks like to the outside world, but that's not actually the truth. Because Matt was trying to get this book published for 15 years. What a struggle, what a journey. And in that time, he was also a teacher. But the fantastic thing is that he did get it published. He learned so many lessons about himself. He was able to impart those lessons onto the children that he taught. And so it really is a story of perseverance, of self-belief, of difficulty, but overcoming all of those blocks. So if you're on your own journey and needing some inspiration, I recommend that you listen to this story. So welcome, lovely Matt, and I managed to say your name right. I probably can't say it right the second time now.
You got it.
Eicheldinger. Eicheldinger?
Yes. Perfect.
Where does that name come from, apart from it being your second name?
I've been told, and I was told this by my high school German teacher, when I didn't even take German, that my last name is German, and that it translates, the direct translation is tree thingy, which then represents the hat of an acorn. And so many of my students over the years have called me like Mr. Tree Thingy or Mr. Acorn, but German heritage is where it comes from.
Wow. Okay. I like the tree thingy. Is that an official term in Germany? A tree thingy?
I'll have to talk to someone over there, but we'll say sure. We'll say sure.
We'll get lots of Germans now saying, no, it's not. No, it's not correct. So we should talk about how I came across you and why I've got you onto Breaking the Blocks.
Yeah, I'm curious about that too.
Basically, I was on the old Instagram and one of your reels popped up on the Explorer page and I thought, he looks like a friendly chap. What's he talking about? And then you just said, hi, I'm Matt and I'm a teacher and I've got a great story for you. And then you told this lovely story about one of your children in your school. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was so engaging. And so I followed you. And then I watched about another two or three of these stories. And then in your stories, you were talking about your new book, which is coming out. Mm-hmm. And you actually said, in my stories, I always talk about how we should have self-belief and the things that our kids learn. But actually, I'm kind of sitting here now with this imposter syndrome and worrying about myself. So then I was like, okay, ping, that's it. I'm going to email you. And Matt, for anybody who's listening right now, has got hundreds of thousands of followers. So I just sent a little email saying, hey, Matt, I just wondered if you come on my little brand new podcast. And I got this very official, you must write to this submission place. And I had to fill out this form, which was how many listeners do you have? And I felt like saying at the moment, two men and a dog. Does the dog count? Yeah. Which is not true because I've got my Crafty Monkeys audience and they're a lovely loyal bunch, but it is a new podcast. And so I wrote then at the end why I wanted to interview you. And I was really just genuine with it. And I just said, it's not about numbers. It's about stories. That's mm-hmm. what I want to do with this podcast is share people's stories. And you wrote back and you started your email with, hello, Rachel. Thank you so much for writing to me. And I thought, here we go. Yes. At this time, I won't be able to.
I'm used to those rejections too.
But then you said, I would absolutely love to come on your podcast because your reply was so genuine and mm-hmm. authentic. What was it about the genuine and authenticity thing that kind of rang true with you?
Sure. So, you know, being on Instagram and having a lot of followers is totally new to me. I've only been doing this 6 months. And before that, it was like 50 followers and my grandma that I had on Instagram. And, I went from 50 to almost 250,000 in less than like a month. And so the amount of requests coming in were like 10 to 20 daily for podcasts, interviews, whatever it would be. And so I created that form to help kind of vet some things. Because what I learned quickly is many people just want to take advantage of you. If you can't see a clear reason why you will come out with something positive, most of the time people are just trying to take something from you. And not to say that that's everyone, but I unfortunately had to learn that the hard way. And so when I see requests come through that tell me that people have taken the time to listen to a story that I've told, and they also have reflected on those stories, to me, that's an easy yes, because number one, I know you're invested not in my platform. You're invested in the story and wanting to learn more. And that's really all I need. And so I was happy to say yes, because sharing stories and talking about, you know, blocks or whatever it is in the creative process, that to me is a lot of fun to do.
Good. Well, I'm really glad that you said yes.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I genuinely do love your stories, so much so that I was driving to the beach. Well, I wasn't driving to the beach, luckily, because otherwise people would be worrying about my driving right now with what I'm going to say. It was my daughter's friend who drove us to the beach on Sunday. Okay. And so I was in the back of the car, which is really unusual. I'm usually driving the car. And as the car was just going down the road and I was looking out at all these trees, and just because I can't look at my phone, I feel sick in the car. So I was looking at all these trees and trees, and then I saw the markings on the road. Oh. And it reminded me of a lovely story you had.
Yeah, it was a mixture. It was like I did a flashback to me looking at the road and then also seeing that in my own kid. And it's funny because sometimes I tell stories that are so extremely personal to me that I feel like no one will connect with them. But what I'm finding as I'm telling more and more stories is that it doesn't really matter what value I hold the story at, is everyone takes something different from it. And that's been really cool to see. Is, you know, I think at the beginning of my storytelling, it was, I had this one theme or intention. And so I tried to, you know, craft the story all around that meaning. And now I've learned I don't need to, I can just tell the story as it was and what I learned from it. And then people will have something about the story that echoes with them too, which is so cool.
Yeah. Well, I would advise anybody to go and look at your account and just watch your daily stories, because they're fabulous. Oh. And we'll talk more about that in a second. And I'll put all the details, of course, in the bio underneath. But I want to know about this storytelling thing of yours, Matt, because obviously your book that is about to come out, Matt Sprout and The Curse of the 10 Broken Toes. Now, I tried to get this, by the way, in my country, and I can't get it until the end of March, unfortunately. Yep. I thought I could listen to it, but I can't get it. But it is actually about you, isn't it? This book is about you.
Yeah, more or less. Yep. Yeah. So like the way the book formed was in my classroom when I was a first year teacher, I had all these colleagues who were like able to get kids motivated because they had their own little niche, right? Like some teachers handed out candy, some teachers danced. And I was like, I've got nothing. Like what can I do? And I just happened to have a really good memory when it comes to experiences. And so I can remember a lot of my own childhood. And so I started telling these stories in class, embarrassing moments of me, and my students really loved it. And so when I was 21 or 22, I was like, I should probably write all these stories down before I forget. And as I was writing them down, I just kind of started weaving them together. I have no background in writing. Like I went to college for, you know, to be an educator. And then before I knew it, I had a book in my hands that was about me. And what's cool about the book is, at least especially for me and my family and kids I grew up with, is there's all these little Easter eggs and nuggets to our childhood, things that we experienced. But if you were to point to any part of the book, I could easily tell you that comes from something. And sometimes it's written exactly as it happened, and sometimes it's an exaggeration, but everything in the book stems from something from my childhood.
I think it's the best kind of storytelling when, as you say, those stories are real, when you've got them in your head, when, you know, it's that authenticity again, isn't it? It's that being genuine. And that's what people relate to. I think we all do. We can all tell when someone is wearing a mask, when someone is not being themselves.
Sure.
I think, you know, it's a really good idea that you come up with. But were you always a storyteller? So when you were little, or when you were like 12, 15, were you the kind of person who would sit at a party and go, oh, let me tell you this great story? When did it start?
I don't know. I've never been asked that question. I wish it was easy to be like, oh, I've always loved to tell stories to an audience. But no, I come from just like a pretty art-filled family. So my mom opened up the first dance studio in our town. So I grew up around tap, jazz, and ballet. I was up on stage doing those things. I was in plays at our church. And so I've always been comfortable speaking in front of people. But as far as telling stories, that's all new. The only stories I did tell when I was younger were lies. I lied constantly to my parents. And it's like, you know, they told me how easy it was for them to tell that I was telling a lie. And I used to think I was really good. And now that I have my own kids, when they lie, I'm like, oh, it is really easy to tell. but that's the only type of stories I told were lies, unfortunately.
As you say, you trained to be an educator, to be a teacher.
Yep.
So once again, was this something, although you enjoyed the performance side of things there, was this something that you really wanted to do in your heart? It was, I want to be a teacher. This is something I want to do.
It came on much later than I thought. So even up into my, you know, my last year of high school, my plan was to go to school to be an architect. My parents had bought me my first computer. We had downloaded the programs I needed. And then the first month of the summer, we ran a soccer camp, our high school soccer team. And they always put me with the littlest kids. And it was something that everyone else really didn't like to do, but I just happened to enjoy it. And I loved running around with all these little kids. And it was kind of in that moment I started to realize, like, what am I actually naturally good at? And what I'm naturally good at is just being with kids. And I had a lot of great teachers growing up too. And so I thought, well, maybe being some sort of educator is something I want to try. And that's just what I went for. I really feel like I fell into teaching because it felt like the right choice, but I didn't fully understand what being a teacher was. It just felt like the right move, if that makes sense. I have taught the same grade my entire career. So I've taught sixth grade. So that age is 11 and 12.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that surprises me because the stories that you tell, I had it in my head that they were maybe slightly younger, maybe 8, 9.
I would say that many of my stories do come from when the kids are probably in the first 6 months in my classroom is where a lot of my memories are from. And that's because they still feel like elementary school. They still feel like they're in fourth or fifth grade. And then I like to joke by the end of their time with me, they've become teenagers. And so they no longer think I'm cool. They've moved on. but it is the perfect age for me to teach. And I wouldn't want to teach another grade level at all.
You know, it's quite unusual to have a teacher who's got a book coming out and who has an Instagram account. I mean, they must love you with your Instagram account with over 300,000 followers. How cool is that?
Well, it is cool. But also, like, a lot of them don't know, because what happened with me was I signed my book deal, which was not like, I love my book deal. I was really happy with it at the time. And the tough part was it wasn't the advance that I got from my books wasn't enough to support my family. And so we had to make a choice, and we had to make the choice in one day, because the next day was the last day you could put in for what's called a leave of absence from teaching. And so my wife and I had to look at each other and we were like, do we just go for it? Like, this has been your dream for 15 years. You just do it. And we were able to budget for a year basically. And we're like, all right, this is the year, let's do it. So at the time when I don't teach right now, I'm just at home by myself writing all day. My students knew that I had a book coming up, but I had no Instagram following. But now that I do have the Instagram following, so many former students reach out to me. And that's been the best, because as a teacher, when your students leave, unless you're in a small town, you usually don't see those kids again. They're just gone. But to have so many, and I've had hundreds reach out to be like, I saw you on Instagram. I remember sitting in your classroom. It is so fulfilling.
Yeah.
So fulfilling to reconnect with those kids. And I've spent a lot of time to, when a kid does reach out, we go back and forth for a while. So it's not just a, hi, I remember you. It's a, what are you doing? What are your jobs? Do you have a family? Because a lot of those students that I had my first few years teaching, they are adults now. They're starting families, which does age me a little bit. But I do enjoy seeing them out in the world rather than just in the four walls of my classroom. It's pretty special.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's go back to you saying a few moments ago about that you didn't really understand what teaching was really about until you did. So what was the transition? When was that? And what is it all about now that has changed?
That's a fabulous question. I actually think if you were to place me at different points in my career, I'd have different answers. So the first school that I was hired in was one of the wealthiest areas in Minnesota, where I'm from in the United States. And there is a lot of high expectation of kids. And so when I got my first job, my first thought was, oh, this is a job where these kids are already studying for college entry exams at 11 and 12 years old. Not all of them, but enough for me to be like, oh, I have to actually help them learn. Like, this is not just fun time. We have things to accomplish. And And that was my focus for the first 2 or 3 years. But at the same time, I'm just a big relationship person. And I think the reason that kids enjoy coming into my room is because I'm kind of like a big kid. Like, I'm just happy-go-lucky and we mess around. And so I always felt like this push and pull of, what are you spending more time on and where are you getting the most bang for your buck? So if you are only focusing on learning, are the kids really learning as much as they could be as if you took 15 minutes and played a game? And what I've discovered in the last 3 years is the more time that I spend just getting to know my kids in a way that's not based in academics, I see greater results with learning. And so something I started doing the year before I went on leave is we started doing something called circle time, which sounds like something you would do in early education, right? But my 11 and 12 year olds, we would sit in a circle in chairs and I would have 5 questions on the board. And I did this at the beginning of each week and we would just sit and talk about nothing about school. And if the conversation ended, I would have an activity for us to do. But oftentimes it went for over half the class and kids didn't have to talk. Some kids were quiet often. But I always found that the rest of the week just went so well. It's almost like kids they understood like, oh, I get a chance just to like relax in this space and share who I am. And so to answer your original question of what is teaching, teaching is relationships, and that's always going to be relationships.
Do you think that your students have actually taught you a lot about life and yourself?
Absolutely. When I started telling these stories on Instagram, the stories that I started with were stories that I have told before. They're like my go-to stories. We all have our go-to stories when whatever job we're at, whether they're funny, uplifting, or maybe a little sad. And I started telling those and I had themes that I learned from them. But it wasn't until I started going back through all of these stories that I've saved, because I've written down hundreds, maybe thousands over the course of my career, just all over the place in notebooks and computer files. And it was when I started reflecting on those, it's like, man, what did I learn in that moment? Because I think so often when we get kind of rooted down in our job, we only think about, what we are doing that impacts others, when so often what other people do impacts you, even if they're really small. And so, yeah, I think I have learned quite a bit from my kids. And I think that's something that's kept me feeling very young. We've heard that before, like you're around kids, you feel younger. And it's not just like I feel younger with my body, like I'm racing kids or we're playing games. It's like my soul feels younger. It's like I have the same vision that they do of like unlimited imagination. There are no restrictions. And I think that's what's helped me kind of craft being a better writer as well. It's like, I know your mind as an 11 and 12 year old so well, because all I do is I am with you every day. And it's given me a chance to, I think, really just hone in my craft as I've kind of begun a new career of being an author.
That's so nice to hear you say that, it keeps your soul young. But that comes absolutely through in everything that you say.
Well, thank you.
It does. It really does. I think your stories, they are joyful, but there is a learning in each of your stories. There's always a kind of message. Now, some are lighter than others. Leading on from that, it's education. There are problems. So how do you deal with that? Because I know in some of your stories, you hinted actually about a poor girl who sort of disappeared from your class, mm-hmm. didn't she?
And yeah.
How do you cope with those things? Because I know you, I can tell you're a very sensitive person.
Yeah. I guess my short answer is I don't do well. And I think many educators would tell you that. There is a weight to teaching that you feel every single day when kids leave your room, especially if a kid is going home to a place that maybe doesn't feel like home. And I've lost sleep. I can't tell you how many times I've texted back and forth with colleagues of like, I'm up. Are you thinking about this kid? Yep, I'm up. I'm thinking about this kid. And what's hard right now about education is I feel like the people who have the resources to help kids in need like that are being cut from education because of funding. And so you know, you hear about teachers saying like, I have to wear so many hats. I have to be a doctor. I have to be a counselor. I have to be a social worker. It really is true. And I've watched that change. I remember the first time I had to call Child Protective Services because we didn't have someone to do that in our building. And that was a very like eye-opening moment for me. Like, if I don't make this call, this kid might not have a place to sleep tonight. Like, that's very heavy. There's not a good answer. It's just you try and do the best that you can in the time that you're given. But I don't know that I ever went to sleep in a situation like that, like feeling like I did everything I could. There's always something you feel like you could have made that other phone call or connected that family somewhere else. It's just a very heavy weight. And that's why I think so many teachers are burning out, is they just they can't manage it all anymore. You know, with the disengagement too, that's changed a lot. My colleagues and I, you know, when you have a really good activity as a teacher, you hold on to that activity forever because you know it gets everyone engaged. It's a winner. And we watched over the course of even just like 3 or 4 years, these activities that were so good for so many years, just all of a sudden, nobody liked anymore. Kids just didn't want them. And it wasn't because they had done them before. They just didn't reach them like it used to. A really easy example would be like, all right, we're going to create something that deals with coloring and drawing and creating, right? Like just classic sheet of paper, fun activity where you need to go talk to other people. Those things just all of a sudden just stopped, at least at the grade level that I teach. And, you know, our district had iPads, and that's all kids wanted to do. It's like, what are we doing on the iPad today? What are we doing on the iPad? It's like, well, we're actually going to put that down and we're going to talk to each other today. And that battle for engagement became daily. I don't know if this is because kids are exposed to so much online or because they have so much stimulus every day. But that was something that we recognized not too long ago, is these activities that used to work just aren't working anymore.
That's so sad, isn't it? Because like you say, I mean, that's the one thing that I'm trying to do with Crafty Monkeys, is get people back into being creative again. Because I think as children, we are all creative, and then it gets knocked out of us. But I think it used to be it got knocked out of us because we had to pay a mortgage and we had to grow up and we had to do all these serious things. But now I think it's knocked out of us way before that because we're given a phone or an iPad.
Yes.
And people are not doing these things with their hands anymore.
Yeah. That's, I think, sad. It's that instant gratification. Like, if you're on your phone and you see something funny, well, that's great. I'm going to keep scrolling until I see something else that's funny. But at least for me, being in a creative space, you don't get quick hits like that. However, when you go through the creative process and then you're done with that task, that feeling I have found lasts way longer. That feeling that you get when you find a funny video, it's that same feeling, but it's elongated. And so, like, another example is I've learned that I can't write all day and I can't draw all day for my books. I need a break to do something else that's creative. So I picked up woodworking, like whittling, and I was not good at it at all. But I found that even if I did it for 3 or 4 hours and I accomplished I learned a new trait or like a new skill with woodworking, I felt so good about it for multiple days. And I wonder if that creative spirit isn't just knocked out of us. I wonder if it's we are not giving it enough time to really understand that the creative process is a process, and you're not going to, you know, make something that you saw on Instagram right away. It's not going to happen. You need to put in the time and the energy to learn about the process and learn about yourself too, which is maybe where that joy comes from. It's like, I am learning woodworking, but I'm learning a lot about myself in this process. And that's pretty cool too.
Yeah, I wonder how we get people to realize that, because you're absolutely spot on the numbers. I mean, there's an Instagram reel that's going to go right on my break in the blocks. Honestly, that what you just said there.
Yeah.
That's creativity summed up. It is. Mm-hmm. It's a process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just really feel like the more, because I've only, to give listeners an idea, when I wrote my first book, I was 22. I had no idea what I was doing. And it's changed a lot since then, in the 15 years that I tried getting it picked up. But to be able to, I've never been able to sit in a creative space very long. And I know that's really hard and rare for people to find, is that time to do it. But I've learned more about myself in the last 6 months of doing this than I probably have in the last decade. And, you know, in different ways too. Like I learned a lot when I became a father and when I got married, but this is different. This is me exploring, I guess, kind of my, it's almost like I'm rediscovering who I am in a different way, if that makes sense. It's like, oh yeah, I am Matt the teacher, I am Matt the dad, but when I'm sitting alone by myself, what am I? And that's been hard at times. Like it's a little like, it brings me some anxiety to be like, what am I doing? But it's also part of the creative process. Creative process is not just all up, it's ups and downs. And that's what makes those joys last so much longer is when you do experience this down moment. I'm starting to ramble, but as you can tell, I'm still trying to figure it all out.
No, I think it's fun. That's what creative process is. It's rambling. So what can you tell us some of the things that you have learned about yourself?
Yeah, I can try. I don't think anyone's asked me that. I think it'd be funny if my wife were sitting right here. She'd be like, I'll tell you what he's learned. But for me, you know, definitely part of this experience has been learning how much focus I have. And I used to think that I have a high focus level. And what I'm learning right now is I get easily distracted. I've found that the littlest thing distracts me. So I'm having to learn how to redirect my energy. I'd say that's one thing. The second thing I'm learning about myself is, and this is part of Instagram too, but it's, you know, what will be my legacy, if anything? And now that I know I have books coming out, it's changed the way that I've written. Like my first book, I have some pretty big anxiety. The first book, the main character is pretty overconfident at the beginning and it comes off as a little rude, but he changes and grows and becomes this kind, caring person. But now that I've been reflecting on all these stories from teaching, I've embedded so many of these lessons into my future books. And so what I'm learning is to take things that I've witnessed and apply them in a way that kids can learn through a funny story. And that's taken a lot of time. And the last thing I think I'm learning, and I've had people tell me this before and I've tried, but really being able just to sit in silence, that's been tough to try and accomplish, because I do think with silence comes some fear, because all these intrusive thoughts come in, imposter syndrome, and everything that goes around that. But really sitting in silence to allow some creativity to come in, because if you're constantly creating, you don't have the space to be inspired. And so it sounds silly, but even going for a walk and not listening to music and not walking with just by myself and just seeing what I'm thinking about that day. I think that's called metacognition, thinking about your own thinking. And I've done a lot of that, and that's been scary, but also pretty interesting. And I've enjoyed that space. So those would be the three things I think so far.
They're great things to help you in your future endeavors. I saved one of your reels today because I thought in terms of overcoming a block, your reel was where you said, hi, different kind of story today. I'm Matt, I'm a teacher, but I'm also a writer. And I've been trying for 15 years to get my book published. Now, I love stories like this. This is what we have to remember. People look like an overnight success. Oh, your Instagram account's a month old, 300,000 followers, and now you've got a book out. Oh, you've done it in 6 weeks. No.
Exactly. Oh, man. I can't tell you how many people have assumed that I got a following on Instagram and then I was able to secure a book deal. And I'm like, no. I've been grinding at this for a super, you haven't seen me cry. I've cried so many times. Like, you have no idea the type of energy and brain space, not just for me, but also my family who's watched me go through this. Like, it's been a really long process. What I have found over my 15 years of, you know, pursuing this singular dream, like one book, same idea, right? It'd be like you working on the same quilt pattern, I guess, and hoping that someone sees it. You will find your audience. And I think what's hard about social media is it just takes time. And as soon as you find your audience will grow. And I never had a goal of growing my Instagram. to this point. Like my goal originally was like, I'm going to tell some stories and I'll plug my book occasionally. I should probably do that if I'm going to be an author. If you can do something that is repeatable and genuine, your audience will show up because they aren't going to see, what they're not going to see is they're not going to see you and your product. They're just going to see you. And that's what life is all about anyways, is people aren't coming to you because you're a quilter. They're coming to you because it's you. And showing who you are, that just takes a lot of time because it's hard to capture that in a small moment in a podcast or a reel. And maybe I never thought of why I introduced myself as, hello, my name is Matt. Like it just kind of happened. But I really think presenting who you are in as genuine a way as possible is extremely important because it's like meeting someone for the first time, right? You and I are meeting today. I get a very genuine vibe from you. Like this is, I have a very good feeling that if we were to meet at a coffee shop, this is who you would be. And I think those are the types of things that might take longer to grow, but in the long run, they are more fulfilling. Because we've all seen like someone has a funny video and they get 2 million followers because of that. And all of a sudden they have a platform. It's like, wait, but what do you do now? What do you do? And those people don't know. They're trying to figure it out.
So this book, Matt Sprout and the Curse of 10 Broken Toes, which apparently it's your toes that have all been broken. You have a thing for breaking your toes.
Unfortunately, yes, I have broken them all. Yeah.
What is that about?
You know, in the book, I have exaggerated a lot of them because some of them weren't that interesting. Like I was a runner for years. And so when your feet pound the sidewalk for a long time, sometimes your toes crack and those aren't very painful. They're just stress fractures. But, you know, I've kicked walls at soccer camp on accident and broken big toes. I've been trampled by animals. And so those are kind of the stories that helped, you know, that I shared in class and that helped inspire the book. So I wrote the book when I was 22, I think. And then, you know, I have no background in writing, just like I had no background in whittling wood. It's like, well, what do I do if I want this on a shelf? And so I learned that traditionally to do that, you need to send a letter to an agent in the United States. It's you send it to them in New York or California is kind of where all these literary agents are. And then that agent's job is to take your book and then sell it to a publisher. And when you write this letter, you don't include any parts of your book. It's usually just, hello, here's who I am. Here's what my book is about. Would you like to learn more? And you send that to an agent, and then that you'll get a response typically anywhere from 2 to 4 months, which is a long time to wait when it's your little dream. And so I would send out all these letters, and kind of like what we talked about at the beginning, I would get many letters back that said, thanks for sending this. However, we're not looking for a book like this. And so the first few rejections, it was like, it's okay. I'm going to keep going. Like someone's going to love it. And I knew someone would love it because I had a printed off version of the book in my classroom, just in a 3-ring binder that kids would read. And they absolutely loved it. So I had good data to know that what I had created was at least good enough for kids to like it. Now, would a publisher or a literary agent like it? I don't know. So the first couple of years, I just kept sending letters. But then I became pretty fixated on it. And I think the reason I became so fixated on it was I'm a competitor by nature. Like I went to college and I ran. And so I've got a competitive spirit. And so to see kids in front of me who loved it, and even kids started reading it who I didn't know. So they weren't invested in me. They just liked the book. I was like, okay, now I have to. Like someone needs to take this because it's going to do well. But why is no one taking it? And for the next 8 to 10 years, just hundreds of rejections. I kept them all saved in an Excel sheet. And I would go back and tweak the book occasionally. But for the most part, I was just sending letters. And I got close a couple times to getting a literary agent. And I remember the closest I came was an agent said, this sounds like a great book. Send me the whole thing. I want to read it. And so she's like, I'll get back to you in a week. And I was like, oh my gosh, this could be it. So then a week goes by. I don't hear anything. 2 weeks goes by. Eight weeks, I waited for a response. And every night for 8 weeks, I thought tomorrow's going to be the call. It's going to be tomorrow and they're going to take my book. And then I got that email 8 weeks later. She hadn't even read the book. She said, I'm too busy. Turns out I can't even take this. And that crushed me. It absolutely crushed me. And that was a moment where I looked at my wife and I was like, I think I'm done. I think we just need to, this needs to be done. Because this is taking up so much brain space and so much of my soul that I shouldn't feel sad about this most days. So then I had maybe a year where I didn't send any letters. And then the pandemic hit and I was at home and running out of things to do. And so I started sending more letters and I kind of got reinvigorated by this idea of seeing my book on a shelf. And I remember I sent a letter in the pandemic and I actually got a response a month later. And it was a pretty hard rejection. Like most of the rejections you get are pretty standard, just like this book's not for me. And this person was like, you should not make this book. Like this sounds like a bad book. And I was like, that's it. I'm making the book myself. I'm just going to make it myself. But I had no idea how to do that either. And so I found a company here in Minnesota that you can pay to publish your book. And it costs a lot of money. And we did not have a lot of money to do that. But luckily, I have an extremely supportive spouse. And we were like, well, what if we did like a fundraising campaign and just asked people to buy the book before it existed? Could that be my one ask of the world? This is my one time. I'm going to ask my friends and family one time for money. And I'm going to ask them for $20. And so I prepped this fundraising campaign. And I was able to raise enough money to print about 2,000 copies of this book. And so I worked with a designer. We did the cover and I drew just a few pictures on the interior. And then I had this book and I was surprised how quickly the feeling of joy left after I had the book in my hand. Because I was like, oh, I have it, but it's still not what I want. So something that has happened a lot in the 15 years is my goals have changed. Like my first goal is just to write the stories down so I didn't forget. And then my goal was to get it on a shelf. And then I finally got it on a shelf, but I was like, it still doesn't feel right. Like I know this isn't the end of this journey, but this is just part of it. And so for another 2 years, I ended up selling out all of those books. But I was on the ground hustling them. Like I went to events, I went into independent bookstores and said, will you please take this? And that was full of rejections too. Couldn't get into any big stores, but I won some awards. And this is the part of the story that I still can't quite fathom, is I sold out all my books. I had like 20 left at my house. And I looked at my wife again. I was like, I think we're done. Because to print that amount of books, I would need to get more money. And we didn't have that money. And I basically netted $0 after selling all those books. And I was like, I think it's time to be done, but I'm going to do one last thing. I'm going to see if I can talk to an agent to get advice. Like all these New York agents, I just need to talk to one. If I can just talk to one, and if they could just tell me to either give up, maybe make the second one or print more copies, I need someone who's not family or friends to tell me what to do. And that agent's name was Danny. And so we got on the phone. I was like, hey, I'm just looking for advice. Here's my book. Here's who I am. And I had to, it was a consultation. So I had to pay her to meet. And I just found her online. And she got back to me the next day and she goes, I love your book. I want to sign you. And I think we're going to sell this book like really soon. I was like, right now you want to sign me? And that was enough alone. Like I didn't even think at that point my book would be bought. I was just so happy after 15 years, like someone actually believes in my idea that's in the industry. One person, that's all I needed. And so I signed with her and within a week we had an offer. And I went from 15 years to about a week of realizing my dream. And it was so monumental for me. I didn't really know how to process it. But also, I had to make a decision, like I said earlier, of do I leave teaching for a year to go all in? This is not enough money for my wife and I, but do we just do it anyways? And we took that risk. And then the first day I wasn't teaching, I told my first story on Instagram. And now I'm here. And so, you know, it seems simple from the outside, but I feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. It's just taken 15 years. And I don't really know, that might be the fourth thing I'm processing when I'm home alone by myself, is I have a hard time looking back on those 15, because it doesn't seem like I could have done that. You know, like, I might cry. it just is like, I think if I were giving myself advice, I wouldn't have done it. So I don't know. I really don't. I think the only reason I kept going was I had a good support team. I had people in my life who, even if they didn't read the book, I had plenty of people who had never read it. And they're like, "You can. This is going to be great. You're going to be great." And my wife particularly has seen all stages of this. And part of the pressure I feel is like showing all these people that like your investment is going to pay off. Like I'm going to do well. And I think that moment is coming. I feel like I'm in the slingshot moment still. And this book is going to release on the 19th. And then I can't even believe I've signed 4 other books, which is insane to even think about. And I just need one of them to do well. I just need one. And that could show all these people like, hey, your faith in me was like based in fact. Like I was that person you thought I was. But we will see. I joke that the book will either be a bestseller or it's going to be in the dollar bin at a store. one of the two. But I want to be very clear that I think the reason that people aren't able to get through blocks is they do not have support. And to all those people who have been on their own and don't have support and you got through it on your own, you are a different type of human. And I want to meet you because there is no way that I could have done this on my own. There's absolutely no way. But to get that strength from other people, I think is really vital as you chase dreams, because as you have expressed, dreams have these really big highs of these little tiny glimpses of you're like, this will be it. But then those lows are almost, they're greater than the highs. Does that make sense? Like their drop is so much more than the high was. And to pull you out of that, you do have to have your own, you know, kind of tank of perseverance, but you need someone sometimes just to pluck down and be like, come on now, get back up. Let's go. Sorry. That was a big emotional ramble.
I love the emotional rambles. Yeah, well, I just think it's incredible. And I'm telling you, you have got, I sound like Simon Cowell now, you've got the X factor. You've got it. You'll be fine. Oh, I know this will work. Yeah. And you know something? If it does end up in the bin, the dollar bin, at least it's in a store. At least it's in a store in the dollar bin. True. But it's I know that you will pick yourself back up and you will get back on the horse again. Mm-hmm. So, and now this is the interesting thing that you do. So you've had this first book that's come out. So are the next books that are coming out? Cause I know that they're already there, aren't they? Ready to go. Is that right?
Kind of. Yeah. So like when I signed my first book deal, it was a multi-book deal for 2 books. So it was to remake the one that I had made by myself. And they asked me to like do a bunch of illustrations for it, which I did. And then it was for the sequel, which I had already scoped out in my head. Cause as a creative, as you're working on something, you're also working on 8 other things in your head, right? And so I had a bunch of sequels to write. So that was my first book deal. And then I was able to secure these other book deals because my pre-orders for my first book set records at the company, which is another thing I can't wrap my brain around. And so then I was like, hey, I also write other things. And my editor has been a fabulous advocate for me, because what happens in publishing is you have your editor, but they also need to pitch to the publisher and say, here's a book that I have acquired that I think will do really well. So it's still not even a done deal yet. So I've got my first 2 books coming out, and then I've got the 3rd book in the same Matt Sprouts series, along with saving stories from my classroom. As teachers know, we always have to create things for our students. So I've written hundreds of what I think are hilarious and insightful poems. And so I'm going to have a book of poetry for kids come out that's fully illustrated. And that's called Holes in My Underwear. And I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be really good. And also I hope it's a book that parents get to read with their kids and they laugh, but they're also like, oh, that's kind of insightful. That's my hope. And then a book that I'm really excited about that I think could resonate with a lot of people is a book of stories that I tell like on Instagram. And that one comes out this October. It's called Sticky Notes, Memorable Lessons from Ordinary Moments. And it's a book of 100 short stories. They are very short. They fit on a single page. But my hope was to not only show people what teaching is like, but also give them a story that they can pull something from. And so almost all of these books are done. The third book in the Matt Sprout series is being read right now. I finished all the illustrations. And then the book Sticky Notes is pretty much done. And then Holes in My Underwear, I have to start compiling all those poems pretty soon. And so next year, I won't be returning to the classroom because I have all these other projects coming out. And so I'm delaying my return for another year just to see how this dream plays out. But very excited to have the opportunity, even if they end up in the dollar bin, just to have a moment where I was like, I broke through, I gave it my best shot. Just extremely thankful to try.
What advice would you give now to that Matt that was sat there after all those rejections and saying, oh, I'm done? I mean, I know obviously you'd say, keep going because you're going to get an agent. But
yeah.
What kind of wisdom, what thing could you say to yourself?
There'd be a few things. I think one thing that my younger self was definitely thinking about in hindsight, and this is how I thought book deals work, was part of me thought, like, you get a book deal and you're set for life. Like, you're going to be rich and you will not have to work. And that wasn't my main motivator, but it was certainly a portion of it. And so the first thing I would tell myself would probably be a question, would be, why are you pursuing this? And just to almost like recenter myself. Because I think if at the heart of what you're doing is genuine and you're doing it for a very maybe not selfish reason. And then for me, the not selfish part was, I know this book can help struggling readers because I'm watching it. I think if that is your goal, you will meet that goal. And so that'd be the first thing, is I'd ask myself that question, like, why are you doing this? Reflect on that for a second. I think the second thing that I would tell myself, and this sounds so silly, would be to slow down, because I went through bouts of really high, intense moments of, I would send like 50 letters in a weekend, which it doesn't sound like a lot, but each letter has to be very particular and different. You can't just copy and paste. They're all unique. And I would have told myself to slow down and not do them in batches, because I would, again, have these big highs and then these big lows. And then the third thing might be, man, I think I would have liked to have shared that process with my students earlier on, because in my later career, when I started sending these letters, I actually showed my students, I'm like, I'm sending this letter today to this agent, that's what they look like, and I'm going to wait. And I was surprised how much my students helped me in that process. And it wasn't just them saying, like, you can do it. It was just them learning that this is what it's like to pursue a dream. And that was almost enough to put in my tank to keep going. I remember I had, so when I made my book myself, my students actually chose the cover. I showed them different versions. And one kid came up and goes, I'm so excited for you, Mr. Reich. This book, I think, is going to do really good. And then he goes, but what if it doesn't? What if you fail? Like, that's an exact quote from an 11-year-old. And I was like, that's a great question. I'm probably going to keep going. And I was kind of like to stop him of shattering my dream. But also in hindsight, you know, what did he get to see? Well, he got to see an adult taking a risk who said, I'm just going to keep going. And I think that's really important for kids to understand. It's like, this is not instant. I don't just want to write a book and it doesn't just happen. You need to see me fail. And so I think that's what the thing I would have maybe even lead with, that is showing the kids more often, I think would have really helped.
And I just want to say as well, you mentioned illustrating, and I have printed out for anybody watching on YouTube now that they can see. Okay. It's fantastic. I mean, it is you.
It is me. The hair is me. And what's funny about that character too, is I've actually been drawing that character since I was like in middle school. I've been drawing it for a super long time. And, you know, there's a lot of parts of my journey that I'm proud of, but something that I am going to hold on to for a long time is that it is so based in who I am, even though it's a silly cartoon, right? And it's silly stories of breaking toes. It is really me. So I'm not just putting a book out. I'm putting me out there. And I'm really excited for that. Maybe another thing that I would have given myself for advice back then is meeting strangers. Like, we didn't know each other at all, right? You reached out and this is fabulous. I would easily go get a latte or a coffee or whatever beverage you would like, because it is fun just to meet people and hear about their journey of life. And we can learn so much from each other, even if the values that we have don't align. Everybody's story is so unique. And there is something that I really tried to stress in the book Sticky Notes coming out, is that everybody has a story, but there's always a story within that story. You just have to be open and ready to listen and see it. And so like hearing about your journey is, you just take away all these little things from everybody. And I think it just makes you a more well-rounded person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. If I come to you in 5 years and say, let's do this interview, and of course I'll have 10 million viewers by then.
You will.
What would you like to be saying?
In 5 years' time, professionally, I would like to say, I'm still telling stories in whatever form, I don't know. Now that I've gotten a taste of what it's like to be a full-time author, I really like it. I really enjoy it.
How does that feel, Matt, to say that? Now I've got a taste bizarre. Of being a full-time author after 15 years.
Yeah. For now, I'm a full-time author. But yeah, it's bizarre to say. Someone told me yesterday I should not say, hello, my name is Matt, I'm a teacher. I should say I'm a teacher and an author. At some point, I will call myself that, but not quite yet. But I think what I would like to do within 5 years is continue to tell stories. And I have so many more things that I would love to write. Whether they become books or not, I'm not sure, but to have time to write them is very special to me. So that's what I would like. And to do that, I don't need to make, you know, the reality is with books, you can have one book do really well and it could set you up for a good amount of time. I don't even need that. I just want to be able to provide for my family and do this daily. So I don't need to have a book become the number one bestseller. I just want to get enough to where I can keep doing this, because there's no way. I've met with some pretty well-known people who have had successful books, but have had to continue to work and their full-time job. And it is very difficult. It is very difficult to do that. And I don't even know if I'm willing to do that, because I know how much energy this has taken. Like, for those of you who are listening, who are like, oh, Matt gets to sit at home every day and just like joyfully write books. Like, it doesn't look like that at all. It doesn't look like that at all. But I enjoy what I'm doing. For my family within 5 years, it's kind of what you said. I want everyone to be healthy and safe. And I want to spend time with my family. Something that I've enjoyed being home is, when I was a teacher, I never got to take my kids to school or pick them up. Ever. I missed every, I think besides kindergarten, I missed every first day of school. So spending a lot more time with family. And, you know, for my own kids too, in 5 years, you know, my kids are old enough to understand that if the book does well, we could be rich. Like, they have verbalized that. And that's made me nervous for them to think that that's what I want. So in 5 years, I really want them to understand that chasing money is not an end goal for dad. That's not my goal. My goal is for you two to look at what I've done in 15 years and understand that you could do that too. That's my hope. And I keep trying to inject that in them every time. And I think they get it. But I'll probably do the dad thing and just keep repeating it anyways.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're very lucky to have you as a dad. They are. And your lovely wife is lucky to have you as this husband who's just so open and vulnerable and caring and with this drive. Yeah. Well, look, before you go, of course, I have to ask you to tell me a story. Can you finish on a story?
I'm going to think of a story while I tell you how I come up with stories.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So something that I do is I have a big box where I have all these yearbooks and notebooks from when I taught, and that's where all the stories are, but the stories are not written out. They are single phrases of, like, you know, when David brought a cockroach into the classroom, and that's all it takes me to remember the whole experience. And that's where I think my memory is really good, is I can remember the sounds and sights and the sensations of that moment, even get emotional. Like sometimes when I tell Instagram stories, I cry because that's what I was doing in that moment. Or if you see me beaming, that's because I'm feeling exactly what I felt in that moment. And so I grab a story that I think will be good, and then I write it down in long form. And usually that ends up being 2 pages, and then I need to shrink it down to 90 seconds, which forces me to really get at the heart of the story really quickly. And that's what I think if Instagram didn't force me to do it in 90 seconds, the stories would feel a lot different. I think I would have been giving details that you didn't need or focusing on things you didn't need to focus on. But since I'm forced to do it in 90 seconds, it's made me a better storyteller. So maybe the story that would fit this moment of creativity. I'm trying to think of a new story that I haven't told, but maybe one that I'm going to tell later. Okay, I'm going to tell this one. I think we'll just call this story Suit and Tie. Maybe I should start. Hello, my name is Matt. I'm a teacher. And today I'm going to tell you the story called Suit and Tie. When I was teaching my first year, I was so excited to be with parents and kids and to have them in my classroom and to experience all that it was to be a teacher. But I was also very nervous for parent-teacher conferences because many of my students' parents were the CEOs of companies. And to me, as a 21-year-old, I was really intimidated to sit in front of these professionals and show them like, hey, I'm doing my best with your kid and it's going to work out just fine. For parent-teacher conferences, the parents come in and they sit across the table from you. And I wanted to have everything prepared. So I got my first suit and tie. It had the shoulder pads. I looked all professional. And I created these folders for kids that had all of their data and all of their writing for 130 students I made. It took me forever, but I felt ready and prepared to prove to parents that their child was learning. And so the first set of parents come in and they sit down and I sit up straight and I'm ready to tell them all about their kid. And I'm like, hey, your kid's doing great. Here's everything they learned. And I put out the graphs and the charts and I'm showing them. And about halfway through my very planned speech, the dad kind of just taps the table and he goes, Mr. Eichelinger, this is great. We're glad. We're actually really concerned because our child doesn't have any friends and we need your help. And for me, I was like, you need my help. I'm 21. And the mom started crying, and then the dad started crying, and I, of course, started crying. But in that moment, I was very aware that what teaching was and what I thought teaching was and what I was doing was going to be very different. And so over the course of the next few months, we helped that kid get friends. We got him embedded in social groups. And by the end of the year, that kid had a flourishing social life. And I think what's important for all of us to understand is what you think you're meant to do and what you actually might end up doing could be very different. And you might enjoy the thing more that you didn't know was coming. And so if you are pursuing a dream or if you are fixated on something, it's good to have goals, but don't be too closed off because there might be other things that you are missing that you were truly meant to do.
I feel honored. I feel honored. Okay. Imaginary like, comment. I love this story. This really touched me.
Well, thank you.
You're so good at it, Matt. You're so good at storytelling. I mean, I was enthralled there. I forgot that I had these headphones on and was listening, you know, to this podcast thing. It's like you were just on Instagram telling me that story and I was enthralled. But what? So I just absolutely love you. I love you. I love your stories.
Well,
I love the way you tell your stories. But I also love as well your soul. It's like when you were saying about, you know, running and getting those the rejection letters. I could see the 11-year-old Matt going to that post box. You were like this.
Sorry, yeah.
I know, but you were. You were just, yeah. You just honestly, you are amazing. You are an amazing human being. Don't ever forget that. And if you ever, if that book ends up in that bloody bin, don't put yourself in the bin. Because you stand next to that bin and go, I've got a book here in this store. It doesn't matter. It's here. Yeah. It fell off the shelf. But you know what? It won't be in the bin. Yeah. I tell you now. Yeah. Harry Potter, well, Matt Sprout, they're going to be best friends. Seriously, well, you're amazing.
Well, thank you so much. This is it is fun to connect with new people, creatives too. I always, now that I've, you know, I don't have my own business, but I tried for a little bit with that. In fact, anyone who is doing something on their own and pursuing a passion, you have my utmost respect and my support too. And so hopefully if you come to my page, you might find a story that gives you the juice for the tank that you need to just keep on going. Because like I said before, your audience is there. It just might take a little while for them to show up.
I shall keep coming back for that juice for the tank, probably several yes. times a day. I might become a stalker now. I need it. Listen, Matt, thank you so much. From
thank
when
you.
You replied to my email, I was waiting for the however word in there, but I didn't get it. I didn't get the rejection email. And it's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah. I've just loved talking to you. And long may you continue telling your stories for years and years and years to come. So I wish you the best
thank
of
you.
Luck
and
with
I would,
everything.
I would be happy to come back too to talk. If anything, I think we fill each other's tanks. So we might need it for that.
And I cry. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. I really do appreciate it. And if you'd like to be involved with the show in any capacity, all you have to do is drop me an email, hello@breakingtheblocks.com. And of course, if you'd like to follow a creative pursuit, if you'd like to learn some of the skills that our guests are talking about, you can in our Zoom classes over on craftymonkeys.com. The details are on the screen right now, or of course, in the bio underneath.